en Ile-de-France.
Écoutez IDFM
sur 98FM. IDFM,
toujours plus proche de vous.
Bonsoir à tous, bienvenue dans cette édition de Happy Hour sur IDFM, la radio du bien-être. Avec moi-même, Olia, jusqu'à 20h, comme tous les mardis. Et je suis très heureuse ce soir parce que j'ai une invitée dans le studio. C'est Laura Angela Bagnetto, une journaliste américaine qui est basée à Paris depuis quelques années déjà. Et elle va parler de sa passion pour le cimetière Père Lachaise. Et elle écrit un livre là-dessus. C'est passionnant. Vous allez voir, c'est pas du tout déprimant. Hi everyone, welcome to the Happy Hour Show on RDFM with myself, Olia, until 8 o'clock. So happy this week to have a guest in the studio, a real live guest. Her name is Laura Angela Bagnetto and she's a journalist. She's from the United States. She's been in Paris for ages though. And she's going to talk to us about a lot of things tonight. One of them is her passion for the Père Lachaise Cemetery. Now this sounds a bit spooky and gloomy, but it's not at all. She will show you that she has discovered some amazing personalities who are in the cemetery, and she has every reason to celebrate the lives of these amazing people in history. So do stick around. This will be in English. And if you want any information, get in touch with us through the website idfm98.fr. Alors, on va commencer quand même en musique parce que happy hour. Il faut de la musique choisie par l'invité. Donc, on va commencer tout de suite avec une jolie chanson, A Willow Tree by Alton Ellis. Et je vous retrouve dans un instant pour l'interview. À tout de suite. Elton Ellis there with Willow Tree, a nice jazzy soft tune to kind of get into the vibe for the happy hour. And I'd like to greet Laura Angela, a very warm greeting to you. Thank you so much for coming to the studio and being with me on the show.
Oh my God, it's a pleasure. Yes, of course.
You know, it's so funny because we've actually worked together in radio, and you know, here we are going our different ways, doing different things, but we've got this opportunity to actually speak to each other on the radio in a completely different setting. It's really weird. It's nice, though.
It's really nice.
So I'm glad you accepted this offer to be grilled by the happy hour machine. No, I'm just kidding. First of all, why did you choose this song?
Oh, Alton Ellis.
Besides loving it.
Yeah, course. I love Alton Ellis, and I love ska and rocksteady. It's always like made me happy, although this is a really sad song. And Alton Ellis is like he was one of the pioneers of rocksteady. Unfortunately, he's dead. But this was one of his big songs, and nobody knows it. And yeah, it bugs me because more people heard it. I think it's like from 1972 or something. But people would love it. You know, it's a beautiful song. So yeah,
great.
It pulls at my heartstrings.
Well, that's exactly why I get my guests to choose the music, because they always have an anecdote or some reason, and it puts them in a really good mood. So the rest of the interview, it just flows along. And speaking of interviews, so one of the key things that I wanted to talk to you about is this amazing project around the Père Lachaise Cemetery, which is one of the most famous cemeteries of Paris, maybe even in the world.
Definitely.
A place that you've been visiting for a very long time, not for morbid reasons, but nope, because you're very curious about history, about people, about stories. When did this amour start for this particular place in Paris?
Well, I mean, I live less than a kilometer away, and if anybody has been around here for the past few years, they will definitely cotton on to this. But basically, I mean, I used to go on a regular basis, but not so regular until we had the lockdown during the pandemic. And so they closed all, if everybody remembers, they closed all the parks. So people were walking in the street, you know, like freaking out, like if anyone went near them. And one of the few places that was open that had tons of trees, that is extremely beautiful, that is huge, was Père Lachaise. And it's so funny because when it was created to be a park and a place where people could, you know, visit their loved ones, which is kind of funny because when it was created by Napoleon in 1804, people didn't really go and pay respects to their dead. They had a different way of looking at, you know, people dead, because they used to throw them in a pit, which was the Cimetière des Innocents, which is right next to Les Halles.
It was a communal grave.
Thing. Rich or poor, that's where you ended up. And so there was nowhere to put flowers or right, this or that. And I mean, all the people in the catacombs, those are the people who were thrown in there. It's a kind of a gruesome story if you want to hear it. But
That's the way it was. It was different.
Definitely.
And so this park aspect was one of the attractions.
Exactly.
So you started walking around there and discovering.
Yeah, so I was like, who is this? Who is this? So I would just like Google people, because there's, you know, there's a réseau in the park. So I was like, oh. And I don't know, I was just curious, you know. I mean, I've looked at a lot of people, and there are a lot of normal people or people who had, you know, didn't do anything amazing or not amazing. But, you know, if you think about Paris in the early 1800s, it was a magnet. It was a magnet for the world. A time when you wouldn't think that people traveled. There were Africans coming, there were Latin Americans coming, there were Americans coming all over Europe. Some of the tombstones are in English, like, because there's English and Irish people there as well. And people don't really understand or believe that. And when I take them there and show them, they're like, oh my God, because it really was a place.
A cosmopolitan cemetery.
It's a cosmopolitan cemetery. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So. And much more than we might imagine.
Exactly. Okay. And it's huge. I mean, there's 77,000 people buried there now.
77,000, but there were.
But I mean, well, it, because I mean, and we can talk about this because it's quite interesting. I mean, you know, I interviewed Benoit Gallo, who's he's the caretaker of Père Lachaise. And so he gave me sort of like the inside scoop. He also wrote a book, so I was talking to him about that. But one of the interesting things is they have a boneyard. So when you die and somebody wants to be buried there, this was a long time ago. I mean, nowadays it's changed. You could either have it forever, concession à perpétuité,
mm-hmm,
or you could have it for 10 years or 30 years or 50 years. It really depended. And some people would pick you know, a quickie, like 10 years.
Right.
But ooh, those who picked the ones forever, those are the people who, like, you know, they are the ones that you see today.
Today. Okay.
But if there is some people who are like, okay, 30 years, the state must contact your family before, like a few years before, to see if you want to renew it. And if you don't, then they take
it. Goes to someone else.
They go to someone else. They take you up, mm-hmm, but they put you in a cute little box, mm-hmm, and they stick you in the ossuary or the boneyard, which there's one in Père Lachaise. So Père Lachaise is partly on a hill, and underneath the hill there's this very beautiful sort of frieze, and it's I think of marble or maybe it's of concrete. Sorry, everyone's naked in it. It was a bit scandalous when they did it in like the early 1900s, and people were like, "Oh my God, they're naked!" But like, you know, you die naked, so well. Or you end up naked, like, at the end of the day. So, but it filled up, according to Benoit Galot, in 2004. So if you're one of those people who ends up in the, you know, in a box, I mean, not in the graveyard, then you actually go, I think, to Passy.
Oh.
So they stick you somewhere else. However, it's all cataloged. They don't lose anybody. They did lose a few people, and no, I was asking about that, and yeah. But yeah, I mean, so for the most part, yeah. I mean, during the wars, there was issues, but yeah, for the most part, and that's where you go. So it's really interesting. So the problem is that a lot of these people, if they didn't have kids, or their family doesn't care about them anymore, or it's a lot of money to do the upkeep, they fall into disrepair. And if they become dangerous, because so many people walk in the cemetery there, they have to take it up. So, I mean, it's a major problem. There's some gaping holes. It's because they're not taking care of them. Because the caretakers don't do that. That is a piece of private property of the family.
Right.
Even though it's in public.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So.
Okay. So families are in charge of the upkeep of the tombstones and the grave area.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we're talking about ordinary people all the way up to very well-known people, politicians, celebrities tons of the time.
Oh, yes.
Aren't we? Like a real extreme of people.
Yes. And the interesting thing, besides that there are, you know, people who are like your everyday Joes, but also famous people, there's also people who were famous but poor.
Mm-hmm.
So the state or the city, because they did something great for the city or the state, it's their plot is paid for in perpetuity.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because they have to figure out which ones to maintain them, you know, the city maintains. And so it's a lot of work. But
What's an example of someone like that who was poor but who was celebrated for something that they did and the city hall decided to take on?
So some of the communards.
Yeah.
So who were in the commune, you know, they were all like either murdered or they were banished to French Guiana or New Caledonia. And a lot of them died there. Some of them came back. The ones who came back... Because at the time,
and we're talking 1870.
So the commune was between March and May of 1871, which
1871,
was right after the Franco-Prussian War, which we'll get into because there's tons of people in there from that.
Yeah.
A lot of them were banished or imprisoned on these islands or on these territories. And then when they were finally like pardoned, about 10 years later, a lot of them came back. So a lot of them who came back were like broken people because they had been in like a
jail or
in like a penal colony.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they had a lot of followers and stuff. And so people either paid for things or the city took some of them. So, the guy who wrote the Internationale, which is like the song, like a communist song, he was one of the communards, and now his name escapes me. But his tomb, which looks like a book, it's really beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah, that one was paid for by the city. So mm-hmm. I mean, but that's the sort of, you know,
yeah,
they made a great contribution to the, you know, the commune or so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we've really got, you know, historical events. And then also, I mean, a lot of tourists from overseas, they come to Pere Lachaise. Why? And what's the celebrities?
Oh, la, la.
Jim Morrison, right?
Jim Morrison. I swear.
What's the big deal about it?
Where's Jim Morrison? Where, où est Jim Morrison? Or, dove Jim Morrison? I mean, I can do like 10 languages. It's just like ridiculous. And I'm like, and you know, he's up a hill. So anyone who's listening, who's not very able-bodied, do not try it because it is a cobblestone hill and it is not fun to go up there.
Right.
If, you know, if you have issues with the mobility. But yeah, I mean, and the sad part is his tomb is in between all these other tombs, and there's like this like a bamboo. I mean, I only know this because I'm like forced to take my friends who are like, oh, I really want to go see. So I'm like, oh god, okay. But and I mean, no, I'm not dissing Jim Morrison. I mean, I'm not a fan, but there's so many other people.
Well, this is this is what's interesting is you're bringing out to people's attention with the idea of this book is to say, hey, there are so many more people who have had these interesting lives.
Exactly.
So don't focus just on Jim Morrison. Have a look at else.
Exactly. I mean, there's a few other ones that I'm like, okay, I will give you grace for that. Like Colette, the writer.
Okay.
I mean, she was a rock star, so okay, fine. You know, or La Môme, Edith Piaf is there. Okay, yeah, she, I mean, and we're in Paris, so voila, that makes sense. But yeah, there's, I mean, Gaspard Ulliel, sadly.
The young actor
who died in the ski accident 2 years ago. He's there. He's actually right next to the Columbarium where they have all the people in little like niches in the wall. His tomb is right there, so right next to it, but he has an actual tomb.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, yeah, okay. So that's really interesting. But, yeah, so, and some people who know him, they're like, where is it? I'm like, oh, it's right over there. Like, you know, like, I mean, there's so many other, I could go on and on, but yeah. So those are the people who are, you know, everybody's like, where are they?
But, yes. But you're actually, trying to find out about the lesser known people, the people who've been forgotten and bring them back into the conversation.
Yeah. And there's a lot of
celebrate them.
Exactly. And there's a lot of people who are French who people know their name, but they don't quite know anything about them.
Yeah.
Like Guillaume Apollinaire. He was like this famous French poet. He has a really interesting tombstone. It's like this giant rock. It's like a plinth almost. It's very like rough hue. But the interesting story about this is that he went to war during World War I. He came back and he died of the Spanish flu 3 days before the end of the war. And, you know, his name is Guillaume.
Yeah.
So people in the streets were shouting, off with you, Guillaume, but not about him, but about, you know, the Kaiser.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when they were burying him, they were like his family and friends were hearing these chants about Guillaume on the street, and his best friend screamed out, "Why did you have to die?" Because it's like he survived the war,
yeah,
but not the Spanish flu.
Oh,
so voila. Although you know what, he wasn't. I think he was a bit of a weenie, but anyway, that's another story. So I'm not a fan either, but yeah,
okay. But you know, again, one of these very well known French, well, fairly well known, I think, in literary circles. Certainly, but maybe not the grave is as well known as other graves. So interesting.
He's down the street from Proust. So FYI,
keep the competition slightly at a at a distance. We don't want any fighting in the cemetery at night.
Exactly.
Alive. Speaking of coming alive, why don't we play a song that you have thought of for us? To kind of bring the cemetery vibe into the show.
Yeah.
You've got Cemetery Gates by the Smiths.
Oh, yes.
Tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, the funny thing is that...
And we'll listen to it.
I sing it in my head every time I go to the cemetery. And I go there like at least 3 times a week, so it's a little bit silly. But and there's a special mention of a certain person.
Ah, that we have to listen out for in the song.
Yes,
okay. And then afterwards we'll see if we've picked up on the... on the name. So the Smiths in Cemetery Gates in the Happy Hour Show with my guest Laura Angela Barnetto. We'll be back in just a moment. Ne quittez pas, on va écouter une chanson de The Smiths et on continue notre interview de Happy Hour dans un instant. I dread a sunny day, so I'll meet you at the cemetery gates. Keats and Yeats are on your side.
I dreaded sunny days, so I meet you at the cemetery gates. Keats and Yeats are on your side, while Wilde is on mine. So we go inside and we gravely read the stones. All those people, all those lives, where are they now? But with the loves and hates and passions just like mine, they were born and then they lived and then they died. Seems so unfair, I want to cry. You, sir, throws the sundown salutation to the dawn, and you claim these words as your own. But I've read well and I've heard them said 100 times, maybe less, maybe more. If you must write pros and cons, the words you use should be around. Don't plagiarize or take on loan. But there's always someone somewhere with a big nose who knows and trips you up and laughs when you fall. He'll trip you up and laugh when you fall. You say London do dusting words which could only be your own. And then produce the text from whence was ripped some dizzy whore 1804. I dreaded sunny days, so let's go where we're happy and I meet you at the cemetery gates. Oh, Keats and Yeats are on your side. I dreaded sunny days, so let's go where we're wanted and I meet you at the cemetery gates. Keats and Yeats are on your side, but you lose, cause where the love of Wilde is on the mind.
The Smiths, Cemetery Gates, which is exactly where we find ourselves with my guest, Laura Angela Bagnetto, who's a journalist and who's been in Paris for a long time and working on writing a book about the Père Lachaise Cemetery, one of the most famous around. Tell us a little bit more about this, kind of putting together the ideas for this book. What point did you say, I've got enough to really write something that I want to share with other people? Like, you started getting, you know, all the different anecdotes together. And I mean, it's been a while in the making, right?
It has. And the funny thing is that, so I used to, because, like, you know, the pandemic, like, we were all stuck and everybody was like, I mean, I have friends all over the world. I have cousins in different places. My family is in the US. And so I would say, oh, look what I found today. And I have a picture of the thing and I'm like, isn't this crazy? And it wasn't anything major. It was like a little thing that this person, you know, asked the king for her husband's, like, pension, because he had died and he died on the job. And so she was like destitute. So the king like signed this thing. Cause I mean, I've done a lot of research. So she's like not anybody amazing. But the point is that like, these are the people I found, because of course, those who survived the French Revolution, you know, went into the early 1800s. And those are the people that, you know, I found. I mean, not all, but so I was telling all these silly little stories. I'm like, and everybody's like, you have to write a book. That wasn't even like my thing.
It just came about naturally, because every time you were sharing something, people were like, oh,
yeah. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Okay, yeah. Great. I was like, really? Oh, okay. I just don't think I'm a weirdo. And I just love, celebrating people, and there's so many people to celebrate, you know? So, yeah.
Do you have a favorite place in the cemetery that you like,
yes,
or a couple maybe that you like,
yes,
to go back to each time?
But it's like, it's hard to describe, because so the cemetery, it was founded in 1804, and it was expanded two times more, because basically when the celebrities came in, and I don't mean, you know, Colette, I'm talking about Eloise and Abelard.
Oh, yes.
like 12th century celebrities, and also De La Fontaine, who's probably not there, but anyway, but it could be a cenotaph, just as, you know,
yeah,
there's some, like, somebody's random bones in his tomb or whatever, because he was in the pit, so.
Yeah.
But when people heard that they were there, they're like, oh, I want to be buried next to those people. So it created all these.
So it began to have a reputation.
Exactly.
trendy.
It was super
trendy. I want to be buried there.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, if you look at like Highgate Cemetery in London, or you look at other cemeteries, Père Lachaise has actually influenced so many cemeteries around the world, you know, in Europe and the US, but also in other places. So it's really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of history there. Not just regular history, but like history of how you treat the dead, which is quite interesting.
And so you've got like a little corner that you kind of go and I don't know, meditate?
No, I mean,
pray? No.
No, you know what?
Or just hang out.
This is going to sound really weird, but I am at my happiest when I'm there, because
really?
All those people are my friends.
Yeah,
you know what? They don't say like "dégage" or anything like that. Maybe they would
very
if they were alive, but they're very calm. I'm totally calm. I'm not like, you know, fighting people off on the metro, and like, and some of them are amazing, and some of them are just regular people, and that's okay too. And some of them, even the regular people, have the most gorgeous, gorgeous tombstones, and you just go and you're like, wow. And you
so they're works of art, really. It's
they
like
are,
a
they
kind
are,
of like a museum.
Yeah, they are works of art.
To see works of art, statues, sculptures.
Exactly. I mean, and one of them, which is mentioned in the song, Cemetery Gates.
Did we catch it, listeners? Did we catch it?
Did you catch it? Not Keats, not Yeats, because he says Keats and Yeats are on our side.
Yep.
While Wilde is on mine, and it's Oscar Wilde.
Oscar Wilde.
So yes, he's quite easy to find. He's in the 92nd division, and I don't know all the divisions by heart, but I pretty much know most of them. And so then there's always lots of people around him, and he has this huge brutalist statue. It's of an angel. It looks a bit, somebody said to me, one of my cousins said, it kind of looks like an Aztec statue, which is really interesting. Somebody in the 50s, because he died in the early 1900s, somebody in the 50s cut off his bedoinders. I don't know how to say that. his scrotum.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, dear.
So, yes, and they've disappeared.
Vandalism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, vandalism. Oh, more than just that.
Oh, it's more than that.
Because when I first moved here 1,000 years ago, people were kissing the tomb, like with their lipstick, and it degraded the stone. And so they've had to put like this
a perspex kind of box around it or something?
Yes,
or?
And it's paid for and cleaned by the family. So they actually have put a sign in English and in French, like, please do not like climb over this and try to kiss it. So people like put things underneath. I was there the other day and somebody had like I don't know when they're going to pick this one up, but there's like a little jar that had like ashes in it. I was like, oh, yuck-a-rama. Like, that's not what I want to see. But anyway, whatever. Somebody thought that their friend wanted to be near Oscar. So voila. So, I mean, it's, yeah.
So there are some weird practices that go on.
Oh, hell yeah, to the yeah. There's, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you hear about all this stuff, but thankfully, I mean, you know, I don't see it. I haven't seen it. But, I try to go when there's – I don't try to go on the weekends because everyone, their mother goes there and they're like, oh, you know, Colette, oh, where's Jim? You know, the same what we just talked about. So it's just like, forget it.
But because it's so big, you can easily move well away from those people and go wandering off.
Exactly.
You know, in the far-flung corners.
One of my favorite places, I can't even describe it to you because it's like, it's near the father of homeopathy. It's hard to explain. It's like in this little indent and most people don't realize it's there.
Oh, it's like a little valley kind of thing?
Exactly. It's super tiny, but it's lovely. And one of my favorite tombs is there and it has, the guy was a master watchmaker, so no big deal. But I love his tomb because there's a little tiny circle and carved into that circle is a snake and it's eating its own tail. It's like a perfect circle. Very cool. I just love this. And it's like, for, you know, some dude of the 1800s, like you had good taste. So like, you know, or his family did. And I love going there. And there's because now the city of Paris, and that includes the cemetery, they do not use pesticides. There's lots of weeds and stuff. They try to cut them down and stuff, but it actually gives us sort of a lovely, some people complain, which is what the caretaker was saying, like, oh, can't you clean this and stuff? But they'd rather leave it more like natural. And they do cut it from time to time so that, you know, people don't fall and get lost and stuff. But yeah, I mean,
let it grow more naturally.
Yeah. So there's lots of like trees and shrubs and weeds, but it's not. I mean, it's a cemetery.
And actually, this guy that you interviewed, mm-hmm. is he not the one who took a whole bunch of photos during the COVID of animals who came out creeping through the cemetery?
Two fox families. Yes.
Plus during lockdowns,
like I think there was like a ferrets and tons of birds, tons of insects. And the reason why is because there was nobody around, and also that they let all the vegetation grow so they could feel like they could hide. So he was the only one really around, and so he would just walk around because it closes
in his own private jungle in a way.
Exactly. And just take pictures of them, and he was like so shocked. And the point is that they've never been able to document foxes in the city. And mm-hmm. at first he was a bit worried, he said, because people hate foxes. Like if you talk to country people, like they
see them as sort of pests. And,
exactly.
Yeah. They steal the chickens and
exactly. But when he finally ventured out and said, okay, I'm going to put it on Instagram. And there's a few of like foxes asleep in the sun on top of graves. He was worried people were going to complain. Not a single complaint. They thought, oh, they're visiting our people. Oh. And so it was a like, really positive thing. Oh, so yeah, nice. It was really cool. So, nice. And the pictures are gorgeous. I think it's La Vie Secrète on Instagram. And so you can see it for free, or you can buy his book if you read French, which
okay,
is
so La Vie. He's got a book as well.
Yeah, the book is, I mean, it's kind of a personal thing. It's Français facile, if I may say. I mean, it's easy to read. There's tons of photos. Mm-hmm. He has an interesting story. Both his background, and he tells a little bit about Père Lachaise. So,
Interesting. So, a book project in the works. We will see somewhere down the line how that works out. But it'll be great to share it with all those people who are saying, oh, tell me more about, and you'll be able to tell all the anecdotes.
Exactly. Well, I have tons of anecdotes if you want.
So you've been going there like several times a week for several years.
Yeah.
And you don't go to other cemeteries around Paris to compare or to see?
I've been to a few, but they're kind of like loser cemeteries in comparison.
The one in Montparnasse.
I mean, it's nice, but,
but not the same.
They don't have like the heavyweights, Yeah. They don't have the most. And when I say heavyweights, I'm talking about I alluded to the Franco-Prussian War that happened in 1870. There was a siege of Paris in like December, January. So December 1870, January 1871. All the bourgeoisie and the rich left, except for a couple of notable people. And all the poor had to stay, and they were freezing, didn't have any food, blah, 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 blah. But that's when Adolf Thiers, who was the president at the time, decamped to Versailles after the war. I think it was before, but don't quote me on that. But anyway, he left. The war was over. He and the army and like all of his ministers left. And the people felt abandoned. And these people in Paris, also in other pockets of France, they were like, this is ridiculous. Like, what's going to happen? So they decided, well, we're going to have our own government. We're not going to be Catholic, only if you want. Like, it's a decision. It's not forced on you. The women should be able to work. That's not, I mean, that women should have rights. That's a bit of a misnomer. It wasn't quite as fabulous as that. The kids should go to school. I mean, just basic stuff that like French people celebrate now, and they don't even realize that a lot of it is based on what, happened in the commune. But they were hated for this. Mm. So basically they signed the thing saying we're creating the commune the 18th of March. But by the last week of May, they were dead or being they were on trial. And the interesting thing about this and related to Père Lachaise is that they used to hide their guns in some of the crypts in Père Lachaise. Mm. And the last week, La Semaine Sanglante, or the Bloody Week, they fought it in the cemetery.
Oh.
And there's a wall that says Meurs des Fédérés, so like the wall of the communards, where 147 of them were shot against. There's a sign that was put up years after. When I talked to Benoit Gallo, the caretaker, he said there was 12,000 people at the 150th anniversary in 2021.
Oh, right.
Which is really interesting. Wow. But there's lots of people, pro and con, uh-huh. Who are in the cemetery that are related to it, or they were killed there, which is really interesting.
Wow.
And, sidebar, if those 147, they were shot against the wall they replaced. However, if there's a little tiny park that's right next to Père Lachaise, and there's this beautiful sort of like it was like for people who were combating like tyrants sort of thing. The guy who did it was a son of a communard, and it looks like a woman's coming out of a wall, and then there's all these things. He used the actual stones
from the original wall.
Yeah,
they were shot.
So you can put your finger in in the bullet holes on the wall. Like, it's amazing.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, there's nobody there. Like, you can walk right up to it. It's not like it's chained off. Mm. A lot of people don't know that, but that's a really interesting thing. I mean, besides the bullet holes that you see in some of the tombs that are in Père Lachaise, like, this is like really fascinating. And if I may add, there's lots of famous people who were buried nearby. One of them is Laura Lafarge, and she's buried with her husband, but her maiden name is Marx. She was Karl Marx's daughter. Ooh. So, and he was a communard. He did a lot of stuff for the cause. They got to a certain age and said, you know what? We've given it all to socialism. We love it, whatever. But, you know, we are done. And they committed suicide. And they're buried right in front. Like, there's a row of tombs, like, facing the wall. And so that's one of the tombs that's there, which is really interesting. And if anyone goes to Père Lachaise, you should definitely take a look at that little row, because some people just pass it by. The guy who wrote Les Tombes de Cerise, the song, which was it was written before the commune, but then the words were added later, and apparently he dedicated it to this one of the communards, female communards, who like was trying to, you know, she was like a nurse on the battlefield. Who knows? But I mean, the point is that it's a really famous song, and it's one of the it's a colorful. They've colored in the cherries because it's a time of cherries. So you should definitely. I mean, there's lots of little things to see, but that's one. So
you're not also a tour guide by any chance in this place? I think you could easily set up a business here if you're going three times a week. Hey, no, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, you're very knowledgeable about this place, little secrets and
there's tons of stuff. You know that one of the funny things is that the one of the most popular tombs is the tomb of Victor Noir. It's infamous, but he's more important than just why people are going to it now. So his tomb, I think it's bronze or it's some sort of metal, and he's laying flat out, he's looking up, and his top hat is on the floor. And because he was a man, and he has a really big inseam, let's just put it that way. And women, the sort of the thing that, I mean, this is French women, but everyone, when they know about this, when they want to get pregnant or something, they rub his pants.
So he's become like a homage for women who want to fall pregnant.
Yes, but he's more important.
He's a very manly man.
He is, but he's more important than that. His real name is Ivan Solomon. He was a journalist.
Okay.
And basically, he was charged by his editor, him and another journalist, to go to the nephew of Napoleon Trois to go talk to him, because he had been writing some crap in another newspaper, and they wanted to confront him because they said, you know, this is not right, and, you know, you're going to have to back this up and blah, blah, blah. So he went, him and the other journalist went to the house, which is in Auteuil, you know, in the 16th. And he basically, Napoleon Trois' nephew, pulled out a gun. They weren't going to duel or anything. They were having a discussion, pulled it out, and shot him dead. So this was a huge.
Wow.
And you know, this happened, I think, in 1870. So before the war, before the communards. But the communards didn't forget this, because Napoleon Trois' nephew got off scot-free. So when they founded the commune in March of 1871, one of the first people they like said is like, this is for Victor Noir, because he is like the reason why we have done this. So that is the history that you need to remember, not that he has a giant penis, which is really unfortunate. So
this is the problem, isn't it? The memories that people have, you know, like depending on who's telling the story.
Exactly.
And so this is your chance in a way to kind of right the wrongs and reestablish the truth, which is also possibly one of the reasons why you wanted to become a journalist.
Well, exactly. I mean, well, the thing is that
finding out more about what really happened.
I love stories. I love people telling stories.
Yeah.
And you know, if my favorite question is, do you have anything to add after like asking all these? And you know, let me tell you, you got
that
some real
the gates. Yeah.
Wow. And you know, you get some zingers out of this and you get some really deep truths. And that's what I love.
And it's spontaneous often, isn't it? It comes from the conversation, but it's not direct. So whatever they feel come to the surface.
Yeah, and I've already hopefully made
I'm going to borrow that technique.
You
actually
should do it.
I mean, would anything to add?
They're totally relaxed, and so they're willing. So they're like, I want to share something with you.
Yeah.
So, and they do. And, you know, that's important.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Now, speaking of sharing, how about another song?
Yes, please.
We've got a third one lined up, this time Shipbuilding by Elvis Costello.
Elvis Costello is my favorite.
Is
he?
Oh,
my God. Oh, my God. He's my favorite. I love him to death. Don't read his autobiography. It's horrible. But aside from that, he's always been my favorite. And Shipbuilding is about when the UK was going to go to war with the Falklands. People were hoping in depressed areas that they would be able to make money again they would get some work, build ships. And so it's a really powerful song. And Chet Baker's in it. You hear his horn solo, which is awesome. But yeah, I mean, I love many of his songs, but I thought this one was, I don't know, this one just kind of.
This one stood out, perhaps, for this particular occasion.
Yeah, it did stand out.
Vous écoutez IDFM avec mon invité Laura Angela Bagnotto. Dans un instant, on continue avec notre interview. Vous êtes à l'écoute de l'émission Happy Hour sur IDFM. On va écouter une petite chanson. On revient tout de suite. Is it worth it? A coat and shoes for the wife, and a bicycle on the boy's birthday. It's just a rumor that was spread around town by the women and children. Soon we'll be shipbuilding. Said that they're going to take me to task, but I'll be back by Christmas. It's just a rumor that was spread around town. Somebody said that someone got killed in for saying that people get killed in the result of this ship. With all the will in the world, diving for dear life.
we could be diving for pearls.
Elvis Costello with Shipbuilding on the Happy Hour Show on IDFM. So, Laura Angela, you are originally from the United States. You've been in France for 16 years. We just did the calculation there while we're having our song break. But you've jumped from place to place. You've had quite a cosmopolitan experience yourself because you were like in California, then over to New York.
Mm-hmm. Spent I was quite there a few for years 14 there. 14 years, yeah.
Whoa, okay.
I went to J school there.
Yeah. So that was kind of, the beginning of a certain adventure. And then you came to Europe.
Yep.
But not straight away to France.
No. I mean, right after university, I went to Italy because I wanted to learn Italian and I was an au pair there. So I learned Italian. And then I went to New York in the 14 years and J school. And then I decided after a while to leave. And so I moved to Rome, and I had it was my first job, so it was like a jobette. I don't know, but and I worked at Vatican Radio. So
Vatican Radio,
yes.
Wow.
And I had my own show. I did not name it, called "Who Do You Know in Heaven," but it was about patron saints.
Oh wow!
So, yeah, no, it was fun because it was like I did one about Saint Philomena. God, I can't remember anymore, but she's like the patron saint of breast and breast cancer. So I talked to breast cancer survivors, but then I topped and tailed it with like her life and her bloody death. And they were like, don't put so much blood in it. This is Vatican Radio. I'm like, but this is the Catholic Church. Hello. But anyway, whatever. I will no comment. So, that was
okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
A little bit weird because that's me.
So, when you did journalism school, you focused on were you wanting to go into radio, or that was kind of a happy accident, or you'd done more written stuff, or
I did a combination of things. But I did do radio because I really wanted to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's always been part of your ambition in a way.
Definitely,
to be on the airwaves. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and Italy, there's some Italian roots in your family as well. There's connection
We believe. I mean, with my last name, but it's all
Bagnetto. Yeah,
which means little bath. So in Italian. So as most Americans,
it's legend. It's family legend. Legend.
Exactly. So I mean, I'm more like up to date with my grandmother on my dad's side, who was Mexican, and my mother's from Ireland, so there's the Irish roots.
Another European connection there.
Irish, so which lots is of cousins in the UK. So
Hi guys. Hey, they'll be able to listen to the podcast. That'd be cool. So, but how then did you end up in France? Did you get a job offer?
Yeah, I mean, I took the test at AFP when I was in New York. I was covering the UN Security Council for a newswire, and I was there for 4 years, and it was time to go. I mean, it was a great job. I loved it. I loved it. But anyway, but I was like, I got to go.
It was time to go.
It was time to go. So I took the test, and I got in at AFP on a short contract. And when that was over, I ended up in French public radio. So
yeah, with RFI for RFI. Quite a long time.
Yeah, 15 years.
15 years. Yeah. Wow.
Don't do the math, people. So. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still here. I'm still in Paris.
Yes. Now, and one of your focus areas in the past, well, the past years has been Africa.
Yes.
You have a particular love for this continent.
Definitely.
Where does that come from?
Well, it's so funny. I mean, because I grew up in California, I always had, you know, like Latino sort of like, you know, like from Latin America or Asian, because we're on the Pacific Rim. So there was lots of Asian immigrants, lots of Vietnamese, lots of Indians. And so I knew a lot about them because my friends came from, you know, those
different
cultures.
Backgrounds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so like I would hang out at their house and, you know, I learned that the scarf that Indian women wear is a chuni and stuff like this. And this is the sort of thing that like was great, but I didn't know anything about the African continent because didn't have any friends who were African. So I was always fascinated. And when I went to undergrad, I got my degree in European social history. However, at UCLA, where I went, you have to take two non-white people classes. So because I was doing, you know, Western, like I was doing Western Europe, I decided to take African history, which blew my mind. It was amazing. And I was like, oh, I want to know more, you know. And then life got in the way, but I still had this passion and I still wanted to go. And so I was able to, when I got into journalism, finally, my master's project was based on following five Sierra Leonean men who had been, had their arms cut off during the war, short sleeve or long sleeve, depending on how high they cut their arms off, unfortunately. And so I followed them because they were brought to New York by a Jewish philanthropist who wanted to bring them to a kibbutz in Israel because they were Muslim and try to have this foster this thing. But then the second Antifada broke out and he couldn't because of that. And so he ended up bringing them to New York. And so I followed them around and got to know them in like over, you know, 4 month period and got their stories and then it went from there.
What was the first country you visited when you finally got to Africa? Do you remember?
I don't.
Your first trip?
I don't remember. I mean, I went to Ethiopia when I turned 40 because on the Gies calendar, you're 37.5.
Oh, so, nice. You could lose a couple of years there.
Yeah, I was like, I think I'll do that. So, and I had friends there, so I thought, but I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean,
yeah, you just haven't looked back.
I haven't
continued to go regularly.
Yeah,
over the years.
I'm going to Zimbabwe in a week and Zambia, so for work. But yeah, I mean, everybody should go. The African continent is amazing. There's 54 plus countries, and there's so much to see and do, and they're all different. It's not Africa is not a country, and I think that's really important.
Do you think you would have done you would have done more than half?
Yeah, I think by now.
Yeah.
I think I have.
You've clocked up.
I haven't like counted because I don't want to be like, oh yeah, I've been to all these countries. You know, it's like, right. Because it's not a competition.
It's not a race, but.
No.
But still, you've clocked up a lot of trips and a lot of experience.
Yes.
And you've been learning Swahili.
Yeah. Although.
Which is one of the things you'd like to.
I'd love Swahili. I would love. If I was rich, that's what I would do. But anyway, I'm not rich. I don't have the time, but I mean, I love it. Yeah. I should go back to it at some point, but so especially, you know, before I end up in Père Lachaise. No, I'm not. I'm not going to end up in Père Lachaise. I refuse. But
is Père? I mean, just as a purely practical question, are you a cemetery type person? Do you see you're having a plot for yourself. I mean, is that
Jose?
No, you're not a cemetery. Because some people, you know, I mean, this is a really weird question to ask.
It's not a weird question.
And someone who likes cemeteries, I'm just wondering.
But I think more people should ask this question. Well, I think it's an important question. And I already know what I'm going to do because I'm setting aside money for two tickets. And, all expenses paid for 1 week to the South Pacific, and I want my ashes scattered in the South Pacific.
Ooh,
so,
nice.
Because I want somebody to benefit from my death. It might be my husband, so he's younger than me, so who knows? But, you know, that is part of, because, like, I want to be able to give back to people while I'm here, you know? And I love the tombs and I love the stories, but you know what?
But it's not for you.
It's not for me. I'm here and I'm here. And then when I'm
I'm
not here.
And
exactly.
You're here.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. I thought I'd leave a couple of minutes left for our very last song.
Cool.
And good luck with writing the book on Père Lachaise, the cemetery. I hope to, maybe you can come back and we'll do another session when the book comes out.
Why not?
We'll do the rounds. We'll do the book tour, the radio book tour. But thank you so much for being the guest and
thank you.
Wish you all the best and have a great trip to, a safe trip to Zimbabwe. And merci beaucoup, alors Angela Bagnetto, d'avoir accepté d'être dans cette émission de Happy Hour. On va terminer avec une dernière chanson. I've got a last song for you, which is The Specials and Nelson Mandela.
Yes, fabulous
song. Who is a hero, I guess. Idol, a hero.
He's amazing, yeah.
A god?
Yeah. I mean, but when this song came out, he was
in prison.
He was in prison 21 years, as they say, but he didn't get out till he was 24 years in prison. But the song is so positive, and I love this song, and
so
I think it's important.
And it's a great way to finish up our show. It's a cross between, we've been talking a lot about Europe and the cemetery at Père Lachaise, but this is, Nelson Mandela is now in the other world.
Yes.
But he's looking down on us, and hopefully he's hearing this song, and, we'll keep the positive vibe going. But thank you so much for sharing the music with us and also the anecdotes.
Cool. Thank you.
So we'll go and check out those little secret places in the Père Lachaise Cemetery. Dans un instant, vous avez le Super Sound de 60s et je reviens avec Happy Hour tous les mardis, 19h à 20h. Merci beaucoup et bonne soirée sur EDFM. Ciao.